In this episode of the New York Baseball Podcast, we have a huge guest. He's Mr. October. He has a chocolate bar named after him. He had 563 home runs. You know who it is. It's Reginald Martinez Jackson. Thank you, Wally, for getting him.
No problem, man. Reggie and I go back a long way, but this is his time of year, man. This is when he, you know, he told me that when October 1st comes around, you know, he's ready to go. Even now, he's 70-something years old. He's still Mr. October. He's going to try to give the Yankees a little bit of that magic.
The Yankees certainly need some magic right now. They need Reggie to give pump-up speeches. They need him to go out there and talk to every single guy one by one because the Yankees are not playing a great brand of baseball. But like Reggie says later on, that things can change in a New York minute. But here it is, New York Baseball Podcast coming up next. It is September 18th, 2018. It's another edition of the New York Baseball Podcast. Dan Canobio and Wally Matthews. And Wally, today on our show, we have someone. I did a lot of fact-checking, I did a lot of research on our guest. It's safe to say that our guest today, we never had a guest that has hit 563 home runs.
No, we have not. We haven't had a guest like this at all. And we've had some terrific guests. I'm excited about this show.
We haven't had a guest that had a chocolate bar named after him.
No, we never had a guest who had a fight with Billy Martin in a dugout.
We never had a guest that was on the Naked Gun movie.
That's absolutely right. And we haven't, I don't think we've had a guest who's had his own radio show in two different cities in like two different decades.
By now, I think you know who we're talking about.
No, who?
I think his name is Mr. Reginald Martinez Jackson.
Yeah, Mr. October. And here we are at the end of September. This is the perfect time to have Reggie Jackson because we're coming right into his month. Yeah. That guy has a month named after him.
What does he do like when October 1st comes? Does he just like go outside with his coffee and just look out and just go,
without a doubt. Well, you know, his email address is a variation of Mr. October.
I saw that his Twitter is literally Mr. October.
Well, that's what he is, man. He's like patented the month, but more than that, the guy's a really knowledgeable baseball guy. And, you know, I saw him at Yankee Stadium last week. I've known him for a long, long time, you know, over 20 years. And I said to him, because, you know, there's a way you have to go. Reggie is like royalty. He really is. He's baseball royalty. So you got to approach him in a certain way, even though I know him 20 years. So I went over to him, and I kind of put my arm around him because, you know, we're buddies that way. And I said, Reg, I got to tell you something, man. I said, if I were to build a Mount Rushmore of the greatest athletes.
Great, this is good.
Right? Sports figures. Yeah. Of the 60s and 70s, I said, here are the four heads I would put up there. I said, I would put Muhammad Ali.
Of course.
I would put Joe Namath.
Joe Willie.
I would put Tom Seaver.
Tommy Terrific.
And I would put you.
Reginald.
And he looked at me completely without embarrassment or, you know, no modesty. He didn't blush. He didn't say, ah, man, that's nice. He said, you know what? I think you should add Kareem, too.
Okay, so a fifth head. So who would he take off?
Well, he wasn't taking his own off, that's for sure. But I told him I didn't think we had room for five heads. So after that, it was easy. I said, listen, I'd really love you to come on my podcast.
That's great.
Said,
sure, you softened him up beautifully.
Yeah.
You went to the body real nice.
Now, let me just give you some advice, my young partner here, okay?
Okay, here we go.
Let me just tell you about Reggie, okay? he has a rite of passage. It's become like, you know, we all love Reggie, but we all know this is going to happen. If you're a new guy around the beat and he doesn't know you, he will walk over, take your credential, look at it, look at you, and decide whether or not he's going to talk to you.
Wow, based off just like looks?
Yeah, well, and also like who you work for.
Okay, because that's the tweet I got from Mazzio at from the Daily News. He hit me up and said if he takes your BWA card, that's how you know you made it. Well, I don't have one, so he's not going
to
take one
from
me.
Yeah, so he has nothing to grab on you. But I'll tell you a story. A couple of years ago in spring training, Brendan Cuddy, who's the reporter for NJ.com, does a terrific job.
Hilarious. Great follow on Twitter.
He's terrific, and he really works hard.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's his first spring training, and he's there in the clubhouse down at George Steinbrenner Field in Tampa. And Reggie was telling a story to me and another guy. It was David Waldstein of the Times, who he's known for a long time.
Oh, man, that guy's been around forever.
Yeah, well, not as long as me, though, I must tell you. He actually was the new guy at the Post when I was there.
Oh, wow.
But he's been around for a while, so he knows us. And Reggie's telling us a long, involved story. And about 10 feet away, Brendan Cuddy is standing there minding his own business. He's not eavesdropping or anything. He just happens to be standing there. As Reggie gets to the punchline of the story, he goes, wait a second, guys. He walks over to Cuddy. He goes, excuse me, I don't know you. So Brendan says, well, I'm Brendan Cuddy. I work for NJ.com. Reggie says, well, I'm telling these two gentlemen a story, and I don't want you to hear the rest of it, go stand over there.
You know what that sounds like my caddying days at West Hampton Beach Country Club, and I would caddy for some guys. They'd be like, one guy did not want me to stand with his bag in the tee box. So yeah. I had to run ahead every time because you make me uncomfortable in my tee box. Reggie wanted to deliver the story. He wanted to deliver that punchline. He didn't want to hear it.
And to this day, I can't remember what the story was or why he couldn't hear it, but it's just kind of like the Reggie rite of passage. Yeah. Okay, so now you know I'm Reggie Jackson. You go stand over there. And, of course, he did stand over there. But the PS to the story is Reggie and Brendan Cuddy are great friends.
Yeah,
they get along great.
You got to show them some respect. The guy's, you know, Mr. October. And it's funny because, you know, I was telling my mom who's coming on the show today. I said, Mom, we got Reggie Jackson. She goes, Reggie Jackson, that's amazing. Like, she's only a handful of players that my mom knows.
Right.
One of them's Derek Jeter, obviously. Owen is Mariano Rivera because he's got the church, and my mom's a very religious woman. And then Reggie Jackson and Bobby Mercer.
Wow.
So those are the four or five Yankees that on her Mount Rushmore, Cecil Canobio. So she's excited. That just shows you the level of you know, where Reggie
is. His fame is just, like, incredible. And, you know, if you walk down Fifth Avenue, I guarantee you more people will recognize the name Reggie Jackson than Aaron Judge.
There's a lot that we got to ask him. I mean, you know, it's like you said, we're getting closer and closer to October. I want to talk to him about, you know, what, and I don't want to give away too much, but I want to talk about, you know, his relationship with some of the players, you know, right now on the team and what he thinks about this team, you know, heading into October, because the Yankees aren't exactly playing a great brand of baseball right now.
No, they're playing a terrible brand.
Yeah, so I want to ask him, you know, he's been on teams that have been hot heading into October, you know, most likely the 78 Yanks, who came back and erased that huge deficit. You know, he's been on teams that have kind of limped into the playoffs. You know, that's what's going on with the Yankees right now, and I know that you spent some time with them this past week, and Boone had to field a lot of questions, and I know Boone's is just throwing out some gems. What was the one he said, Utopia?
Oh, he said, we're on the road, we're all searching for Utopia. He said, which is great. I mean, you know, Joe Girardi was never searching for Utopia. I don't know what he was searching for. He was searching for his next CrossFit workout. That was about it.
Yeah.
But the weekend was not a good one. No. I was there for those games against Toronto. And Reggie was there, so we can ask him about that. I mean, you know, it's amazing. Here's a team that knew it had to play its best baseball at this part of the year. And if you just look at the teams they've been playing, this is supposed to be the easiest part of the schedule. You know, the Twins, the Blue Jays, the Orioles coming in this weekend after the Red Sox, and they have not been getting it done. They're not hitting. The pitching is actually getting better now. The pitching is doing a little bit better.
Yeah, starting pitching's there. Bullpen, you know, the bullpen is solid. You know, Betances had a hiccup the other day, but, you know, it's one run.
Well, that wasn't, you know what, there were a lot of soft, it was a lot of soft
contact.
Yeah,
a little flair.
Yeah.
But, you know, the wild card remains. One thing about the A's is they're playing those pesky Rays right now, and the Rays are doing what they're supposed to do. The Yankees are going to have to see them soon for four games down in Tampa.
The Rays have been a nemesis to the Yankees for years, when they're not in the race anymore.
Yeah, I know. Even when you're right. Even when they're not in the race, or when the Rays were winning games, winning their division, they were ahead of the Yankees. They always seem like they're one step ahead of the Yanks, even though they have a team. The Rays lineup is a team of cast-offs, and they only have two starting pitchers, and they're 15 games over .500.
Yeah, that's story for another day. They're a tough team to play at the Trop.
Yeah, that's where the Yankees will be
next week.
So the Yankees have they have three with Boston as we sit down and do this on Tuesday, September 18th. Tonight's game, today's game is supposed to be a day game. For Yom Kippur and out of Yom Kippur, this game's going to be at 7:05 tonight. So that game's going to be tough, and it's going to be streaming on Facebook.
Is that right?
It's going to also be on Yes, but it's also going to be on Facebook.
As one of the few people left on Earth who doesn't have a Facebook account, that means nothing.
So
to
you'll
me.
Be watching on Yes, but I'll be watching on Facebook because a good buddy of mine, Steven Nelson, of MLB Network, will be on the call. He's part of the broadcast team, so
terrific.
I'll tune in, watch him, and see what he's got to say. But the Yankees got three with Boston, then they're going down to they're hosting Baltimore, who, let's just say on paper, Yankees should beat up on Baltimore, but not exactly playing great baseball right now. So it's interesting. I mean, as this team...
And don't you think Buck would love to make things worse for the Yankees?
I know he would like to, but if their lineup is putrid at this point.
I understand that, but, you know, he's going to manage these games like, you
know,
the seventh and eighth games of the World Series.
He's going to do what Buck does.
That's right.
Yeah, but
he's going to mother Buck him.
Yes, he is. It's like, right now with the Yankees, it's, will they get hot heading into October? Judge looks like he is moments away. He could play. Is he going to play tonight? The lineup isn't out yet.
No, he's not going to play tonight. But there were some interesting tweets. You know, he hit in a sim game.
Hit
a home run. But somebody tweeted, and I don't remember if it was George King or somebody. It was somebody that I respect tweeted that his swings look kind of tentative. Because don't forget, it's a little different when you pit, when you're hitting against you know, one of the batting practice coaches, and they're just lobbing it in. And whenever, if a guy's throwing you a heavy 95-mile-an-hour fastball, it hurts a lot more.
So the last couple of days he was facing that 95-mile-an-hour gas, and he said, so George King says it's looking more tentative.
I think it was George. I would have to go back through my Twitter timeline, but somebody said his swings look kind of tentative, yeah.
Well, so we're going to see. He's got to play. I mean,
but, you know, he just admit, and I was standing in front of him 3 days ago when he said, you know, it's still broken, and it probably won't feel right until sometime in the off season.
Well, I mean, he's right. I mean, yeah. It's a broken hand, so what's going to happen with
him? So, well, my point being that, you know, don't expect that when this guy comes back, he's going to be the Aaron Judge you saw early in the season.
So there's only 11 games after tonight. He's got to, you know, knowing Boone and his penchant to rest players, you know, he's got to play maybe 9 or 11 of those games to get into some kind of a groove, you know, 30, 40 at-bats, maybe even less than 9, but it's going to be interesting.
Boone said about 40 at-bats.
Yeah, so he's got to get him some at-bats before here. So we're running out of time here. It's Tuesday, September 18th. I mean, he's not playing tonight. He's got to play tomorrow. Hopefully he does. I'll be in attendance tomorrow night in the Bronx.
I'm not sure he's playing tomorrow either.
Jeez.
Don't be
sure. Ruin my day.
Well, I don't know, but we'll see what, you know, let's see how he came out of the Sim game. Because, you know, nobody's talked to the Yankees yesterday. They were off, right? Tonight, Judge will be, if Judge is there, he will be surrounded by reporters. And I won't be there, unfortunately, but there will be people around him asking him how that thing felt. And Boone will be asked about it, and we'll get a better idea. But, you know, just to hear somebody say, well, I saw him take some swings in the Sim game, he looked all right, it means nothing. We got to hear from him.
Yeah, got to hear from Boone. I got to hear from Judge. I mean, you know what they're going to say. I mean, they're going to say everything's, you know.
Well, you know what's going to tell you the real story? If he's in the lineup. And he's not going to be in tonight. Boone already said that yesterday.
Yeah, tomorrow will be telling. I think tomorrow or Thursday will be very telling, especially against Boston, who, you know, they win one game, they clinch. On Bronx soil.
That's going to happen. Unless the Yankees sweep, they will celebrate in the Bronx.
Ugh, brutal. Brutal if you're a Yankee fan, but, you know, we knew this was coming. The Yankee fans knew this was coming. The Red Sox playing really good baseball. Let's get to Reggie.
Absolutely.
Enough of us. More of Reggie.
Yeah, let's get to October.
Here he is.
All right, Dan, as I said before, we've had a lot of terrific guests on this show, but I don't think we've had anybody of the magnitude of the next guy that we're bringing on right now. And as we head into the postseason, there's nobody I think that we would rather hear from than Reggie Jackson. Reggie, welcome to the New York Baseball Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on today.
Thanks, Wally. Always a pleasure to see you and chat with you.
Yeah, we saw each other this weekend at the stadium. Yankees are playing the Blue Jays. It's supposed to be an easy series and a time for the Yankees to really get their act together going into the postseason, and they really didn't do it. They didn't play well at all this weekend, Reggie. What are you seeing from the team right now?
Well, we're hit and miss, really. We're up and down when it comes to our performance, and we're all not quite happy with what we're doing on the pitcher's mound. We're not quite happy with doing what we're doing in the batter's box, not scoring runs. I'm not moving runners and not getting big hits when necessary. So certainly when that happens, it's going to happen. But when it happens at this time of season, then it starts to hurt. And you start to listen to the narratives. You know, the people start talking about, gosh, well, they can't do it, or they're not doing it. What's going to happen if they don't? And those type of things. We've been fortunate to where we've timed some of our losses with the same time that Oakland has been losing. So we haven't lost all of our ground, even though we've lost some. But the thing that just to keep in mind is keep your head down, keep pushing, keep digging every day. And each day that you do something good, win a ball game, then the narrative is going to change the next day. You're going to be back on your feet. Things are going to be better. And you just want to do your best to keep working through the difficult times to win a game here and win a game there. Not to listen to what people are saying, but realize that you got to be professional. You got to keep your head down. You got to keep digging. And you got to win. You got to win 2 less games than the Oakland A's. They're 2 in the loss column. We own the tiebreaker. And so we've got 12 or 13 left. I'd like to see us to be 8-5 or 8-4 or whatever it is in the amount of games left. And then Oakland's got to win 10, lose 2, and that kind of thing. So we keep our head down, and I think we're going to be fine. I think it'll all come out in the wash, and we'll wind up hosting the game here. But you just have to keep your wits about yourself and keep digging and keep trying, keep realizing this is all part of the deal. Everybody's after this particular position that we're in reference to having an opportunity to be in the playoffs. You've got 30 teams. They're only going to be, 12 or something like that that get in it at the end, or 10 or whatever the number is. You know, we're going to be one of them. So if you got promised that at the start of the season, we all be happy.
Reg, you know, you keep talking about the narrative and how you have to tune that out. You can't listen to what people are saying. Is it more difficult nowadays to tune that stuff out with all the social media? These guys are on Twitter. They're on the internet. I mean, can you imagine back in 77, 78, if you had to put up with all this? Would it be more difficult to have tuned it out?
I don't know if it would have been or not. I know that I wouldn't have participated in it. For me, the Twitter and the, all the Snapchat and Messenger and that kind of, there's another one that's out there, Instagram.
Right, and it's hard to escape these things.
Yeah, I wouldn't have participated in it. It's too much to keep off with. A lot of it doesn't make sense, and I never had that much to say when I was playing in the media or to the public. I mean, certainly I enjoyed some of the banter back and forth between a lot of the media guys that I enjoyed to talk to, because in that day it was a little different. The media was, although they were, interested in splash story, a big splash, if you will. But there was a lot more confidential talk, and there wasn't as much competition with the social media trying to outdo the next guy. And at the same time, the sensitivities that are now out in public and in social media now, when you start saying things, people say things in public now that you should only say in private, or that you shouldn't say at all. And so, for me, even with social media now, I don't get on the edge or say things that are sensitive. It's just not a smart thing to do.
Now, Reggie, you got your Sirius XM show, Swing Away. It's going to be on MagDawg Radio, 11 a.m. on Sundays. It's not going to be just baseball. You're going to be covering all sports. I know it's not your first foray into sports radio. You had your October show back in 2009. But how excited are you to get back, behind the mic and be a part of the media?
Well, I enjoy it. I enjoy having conversations and talking about things that are important, that make sense. I do want to bring attention to things, whether it be diversity and inclusion, or whether it be more minorities in the game, whether it be fairness, and just having conversation on things that I think are important. And at the same time, having fun with guys and talking to people that people are interested in hearing. I do think it's important to hear guys like Dr. J and George Brett, Mike Schmidt, and Isaac Smith, hearing what Shaq has to say, Michael Jordan has to say, hearing what the great Bill Russell has to say, and Oscar Robertson, and players and people like that. And I mean that both ways. Athletes, and the athletes are people. And whether it's Martina Navratilova, whether it's Serena, or whether it's Chrissy Everett, or, people of the past, Maya Moore, the great basketball player, they're a female. They're interesting people to hear talk about things that are important because they've had so much success in life.
Well, Reggie, I was going to say, people look up to you, as an icon, from the 60s and 70s, and I do. I've told you that many, many times. I just told you that last week. Who are the people you looked up to? Who are the, when you say you want to have certain people on your show, who are the ones that to you really excite you that you looked up to when you were younger?
For me, being Black and African American in those times, I understood the struggles of Jackie Robinson, Frank Robinson, Bob Gibson, Henry Aaron, players like that, the great Jim Brown, Oscar Robertson, Willie Davis, who played with the Green Bay Packers, mm-hmm. and people like that that carved a path, if you will,
right,
and set the stage for people like myself to have an opportunity. The Arthur Ashe of the world, the Jesse Owens of the world, and the guys that really dealt with the adversity before I came along and helped me with the path and the road that they cut for me to follow. So I look forward to being able to talk about people like that, as well as being able to hear some of the things that Michael Jordan has to say, Bill Russell has to say, Oscar Robertson has to say.
Would you like to have a Colin Kaepernick on your show? What would you ask him if you had him on?
To tell me what his thoughts are, to not only tell me, but, you know, speak to the American public about what your thoughts are and why you, want to talk about the importance of fairness with police treatment and things of that nature. Then do you have any documentation or percentages of arrests in different towns, et cetera? And so I know the people at Nike, and I'm quite sure that they're giving him information and data and giving him preparation, if you will, for the kind of dialogue and the kind of things that he should say. I feel that when he started his campaign that he wasn't quite prepared well enough. I don't think he understood the depth of it, and I don't think anybody understood the reaction that would be brought up, the reactions that happened, and how people were so offended by his stance with the flag. I didn't quite get it, but I didn't never took it that far. I didn't think it would get that far, that people would take it to that particular point of a disparagement for the people that have passed away defending the flag. I think it would go that far. I thought that people would say, well, my response would be, gosh, why are you kneeling? When we get inside, would tell me, we've got a game to play here now, but when we get inside, you're my teammate. We go to war together. Tell me what's bothering you.
Right.
Where you need to express yourself this way, and can you tell me, do you know why you're doing what you're doing? And certainly when I heard that he talked about police brutality and how it's slanted toward minorities and heavily laden with you know, high percentages of African Americans being arrested, I get that. But I need more data. You need to give me more information. You need to explain yourself to other people and all people, because the flag represents everybody. So everyone has an opinion. So you need data to back yourself up. I have a focus with my foundation on STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. And we focus on underserved, outstanding minds that can contribute to society. Mm-hmm. And most of the underserved people are minorities. And I think it's tragic if we lose people that can help make the world a better place. And so my focus of trying to get underserved people exposed, black, white, Native American, Amerasian, Latin American, whatever it may be, handicapped, LGBTQ, get everyone exposed, because we're going to be a better place if we're better educated.
I couldn't agree more. And Reggie, if you ever have Kaepernick on, I want to hear that conversation. I would look forward to that. But I want to take you back to the Yankees for a moment. All right, we're heading into, you know, Aaron Boone said the other day, it doesn't matter how you're playing now. It's all who gets hot in the playoffs. That's basically what he said. What does it take to do well in October, and who on this Yankee roster do you think has the ability to step up in the moment?
You know, when I respond to a question like that, I don't know if I can pick out certain players, if you will. Certainly, there's certain expectations that I have from some of our leaders. own the ball clubs, certainly Aaron, certainly Stanton, certainly CC, certainly Severino, certainly Aroldis, Brett Gardner, and the guys that have been around. You know, from what I've seen during the season, I certainly think that Glaber, as well as Andujar, and the younger players that have had great years, are certainly going to be able to contribute and make our world here with the Yankees a better place. And so I expect it, I rely on it, and I do believe that we have the ability as a team to focus, and I think that penetrates everyone in the clubhouse, that we have the ability to tighten things up and to be a better team when it matters. At the same time, I think that if you win, you win, and no matter how close it gets to be, if you win, that's what matters. I certainly have the belief that we have the chutzpah, if I can use that
good
that,
word.
That term. We have it, on today it is.
Yeah, that's a good one.
To be able to rally around each other and pull the wagon through the ditch, if you will. Keep digging, keep busting your butt, keep your head down and keep driving. I think that's who we are. I think through it all, when we wind up clinching home field advantage and we wind up getting the one game playoff here, I think all the negativity goes away. I think the narrative changes from day to day. You win a game, it's great. You lose a game, then it's woe is me. But just remember that this is baseball. We're probably not going to win all 13. I think we have 12 or 13 left. Mm-hmm. We're probably not going to win them all. But we need, if we got 12, we need to win 7 or 8. If we got 13, we need to win 8 or 9. And that's basically how I look at it. And that's what I believe.
Well, there's no doubt you start with a clean slate once we get to the playoffs. But there is a different kind of pressure, isn't there? And I must ask you this. Did Reggie Jackson feel pressure, especially in October?
Sure, I felt pressure.
How'd you deal with it?
I felt pressure, and I looked it in the eye, accepted, and went out and made sure all my bats were good at bat, made all my swings were good swings, and made sure I was ready for the task ahead of me. I didn't ever say, oh, this is just another day. This is just another game. I'm going to play this like I do every other one. I didn't do that. I knew it meant something special, that each day was a throwaway when it was over. We had a situation, we had a meeting in Seattle. We had 20 games left, and I made a couple of comments that it's like, you got 80 at-bats left. After tonight, you got 76. After Sunday, you got 72. I said, so prepare yourself a little better. Raise your playing level, your concentration. Move it up a tick. Move it up a notch. We need to be a little bit better than we're playing. At the end of it all, 1 week from today, everybody's going home. We want to stick around and be involved in the party. We want to be involved in a free-for-all that's left over with 8 or 10 teams. So that's my thought of it all. You got to be like Toasties. You got to be a little bit better. You got to be like Kellogg's. You got to be K-E-L-L-O double good.
I like that.
You
got to
be like, yeah, you got to be like Dr. Pepper. You got to be ready at 10, 2, and 4 no matter what time it is.
Now, Reggie, what's your relationship with Giancarlo Stanton? He's the most recent high-priced slugger, and I know that a lot of Yankee fans, that they loved seeing you talking with the high-priced slugger before a game, whether it was Giambi, whether it was Alex, but you know, Yankee fans watching on YES before a big playoff game, you would see them around the batting practice. You see Reggie out there talking to Giambi, talking to A-Rod. Now you've got to figure it's Aaron Judge and it's Stanton. What's your relationship like with Giancarlo, and what will you tell him before the playoffs begin in a week?
Whether it's Aaron Judge or whether it's G. Stanton, certainly I do like being around those guys. I want to be careful so that I don't get stepped on, get crushed. It's so big when they look down.
Yeah,
kind of a long way away. But I do share and understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to lose the baseball. we always remember that we need to put it in play before it goes out of play. So we've got to have that kind of focus too. But I'm either there as a guy that can give them some advice or some ideas. Both of them are very, very, very focused. At the same time, I may see them doing a little something, maybe over swinging a little bit, or swinging at maybe too many bad pitches, if you will. And I'm there to be a reminder. Most of the time, I'm there to help a player remember some of the things he's forgotten, and then help him remember some of the things he already knows. You know, very seldom do you tell a guy something he's never heard. I've done that before, but to be there to be support, and to help those guys have an understanding of what's before them, get them to relax and get them to do the things that they do best, is what I try to do when I'm around the ball club with any of our players.
So who did you tell something that they had never heard before?
Oh, gosh, I guess, I think there's some of the times that you can say something to a player, and we had one of our players we were talking to yesterday when we were here, and he came in a little late for batting practice, and, you know, you say, hey, man, we're staying over on our off day because you, and you're late. Now, how are we supposed to feel about that?
Wow.
We're a team. We're here for you, and we're going to wait here for you. But, you know, we want to get home, too, and enjoy our off day. Now, let's kick that aside. Here's what we're going to do today. You know, we need you to believe in yourself. And there's some players that maybe they're struggling, et cetera, and you get down, and so you have to remind them, you're a great player. You're a great hitter. When you start smoking the ball, when you start hitting the ball, you supply energy to the team. So I know you're down, but remember, you impact the team in a certain way. So get your head up. Keep digging. Let's go. I mean, there's some young players that have never heard that and need to realize it and hear it.
Mm-hmm. How did the player react to that?
Absolutely positive.
Good. Can you tell us who it is?
No.
Okay. Well, I had to try anyway. You know, Reggie, I got to ask you about Aaron Judge and his injury. I don't know if you ever had a hand injury like that, but is it unrealistic at this point to expect him to be the kind of hitter he was earlier in the season? Because obviously a broken bone is going to hurt when you make contact with the ball.
Well, let me say this. He's not going to be out there playing if he makes contact and he's hurt. And, you know, having him come back and play, you know, there's a lot of things to it. You know, you got, probably the top of the heap is Hal Steinbrenner's responsible. The guy that's going to make the most important decision and the guy that can control all the decisions is maybe it's the doctor, but it's your general manager. You know, so the weight of whether he starts too soon and gets hurt, or whether he's not quite ready and not prepared, or if the player says something to the general manager and the player overrules what the general manager wants to do and he gets in the game and gets hurt. As the general manager is the guy who's going to take the fall. So the guy with the most responsibility here is Hal Steinbrenner, but the next guy at the top of the baseball heap is Brian.
Right.
So he's got to make the right decision. And when, you know, I was hoping that the Judge would get in a ball game in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him take some swings in Oakland. I saw him take swings in Seattle, and he looked really good. But at the same time, yesterday, everybody came out to watch him. He had a great batting practice. Now it's like, how's he going to feel tomorrow? How's it going to react overnight? Is there going to be pain? Is there going to be swelling? Is there going to be anything? So now you got to go through that. And then in all of our lives, especially if you've been an athlete, it's always, when you're ready, we're going to wait one more day.
Do you think they're too cautious these days because of how much money?
You're not listening.
Yeah, I am. No, go ahead.
when a player says he's ready, and the medical people say he's ready, the old anecdote is, the old comments are, we wait one more day.
Yeah.
Because we look how far we go back if something happens. So let's go one extra day. We won't miss that one extra day 2 weeks from now. But if something would happen to him, let's see how he's going to be tomorrow. Since he had batting practice today and came out okay without injury, should we fire him up again tonight? Probably not. And now, if you're the person that's on the hook for it, you're more than likely going to take the extra day. Mm-hmm. This guy's a significant piece of the franchise.
Yeah, but whether it's
Aroldis or whether it's Severino or whether it's Gleyber Torres or Andujar, these people are important for our franchise in the future. Now, go ahead. Your name is Don?
No, this is Wally.
This Don or Wally.
Yeah, Reg, Wally? I was going to ask you, when you were playing, did they give you the extra day, or wasn't it more like, you're okay, get out there? It just seems like they're more cautious with players these days.
In honesty, I would say to you, in my day of playing, the sophistication of medicine wasn't as much. Mm-hmm. However, the extra day did apply.
Yeah.
I got that statement from when I played. When you're ready, we're going to take one extra day. I got mad because I wanted to lie and say I should have said I was ready yesterday.
All right.
Then I could play today. But that's an old adage. That's an old adage, that when you're ready, we're going to give you one extra day.
Okay.
Reggie, I got a fan question here. This comes from Jason at My Good Karma. Jason wants to know. What would you have liked Sterling's home run call to have been for you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really pay much attention to that.
We love the home run calls here.
I always hit a home run, and I ran around the bases real fast. And when I went past the umpire to catch it, I'd tell him I'd be back in 20 minutes.
Maybe Reggie Jack's one? I mean, that's like the easiest one I can come up with for Sterling for you.
Reggie Jack's what?
Reggie Jack's one.
Reggie Jack's one.
Yeah, that's not bad, right?
Reggie Jack's one.
It's not bad.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Not my best work, but I mean, that's up to Sterling to come up with.
Sterling would come up with a good one. Reggie, I got to ask you, let's go back for a minute to October 17th, 1978. You hit the three home runs on three pitches, I should say 77. How locked in were you that night? And were you? Do you get to a point where you're expecting to hit a home run and you're just waiting for that pitch to come in?
I would say I had been locked in like that a few times in my career. Yes, I would expect to hit a home run because the ball looks big and everything is perfect with your timing. You're in a nice groove and a good feel, if you will.
Right.
So I would say, yes, I did. I could go to home plate and then expect to hit the ball over the fence. I had a few other times in my career where I've swung the bat like that. I had a couple series one time in New York and Boston, and I was 9-for-13 in New York, and we went to Boston, and I was 5-for-6, 1-for-4, and like 2-for-4 in a series. Drove in 16 runs up in Boston in a series. Drove in 10 on a Friday or a Saturday. And so I've been in that groove before. When I went to Baltimore, I had a streak where I hit like 6 or 7 home runs in 6 games and stuff. And so I've had those moments before. And, I've been there before, I guess, and had those experiences.
Oh, Reggie, I know that you think deeply about, how the game is played and all. Were you ever able to figure out why at certain points in the season you would be that locked in and then at other times, like any other player, you wouldn't be?
Not really. Is this Wally?
Yeah.
Not really, Wally. I would say to you that toward the last 7 or 8 years of my career, I had looked at some of my records, and there was a sometime in May or June when I always played well. And then when around August the 20th and something like that came, I just expected to do well. Mm-hmm. It got to the point where I could almost wait for August 20 to come, and I knew I would be good. So I developed the confidence and started just to rely on the calendar, because I would say, I know I'm good. You know, my game will be here when the time comes.
Right.
And I did build some confidence with the success I had.
Yeah, because it's always kind of puzzled me, like, why players would get so hot and then cool off. And I assume part of it is physical, and part of it is the psychological aspect of the game too, that, you know, there are just times when you, for some reason, whatever, you know, you feel confident, and other times that you don't.
You're right on that. At the same time, players do get tired, and sometimes tiredness brings, slumps to guys too.
Yeah. You know, I know you don't like to compare eras either, but I mean, 563 home runs for you against, you know, some of the pitchers you faced. What does that translate to today? I mean, it seems like, you know, there's such an emphasis on the home run, and so many more guys hit home runs. How many home runs would Reggie Jackson hit in this kind of baseball?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is in today's ballparks, they're so much smaller. You know, I think guys throw harder. I think there's more guys that throw 95 and above.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does that mean? It certainly has a great deal of meaning. The only thing that I couldn't tell you is what kind of command do you have to pitch? If you're wild in the strike zone, and I'll say that again, you can throw 95 to 100. If you're wild in the strike zone, you're going to get hit.
Right. Nathan Eovaldi is one of those.
No matter.
Yeah.
So for me, I think the smaller ballparks do help. I think everywhere you play now, from Anaheim to the White Sox, no matter where the park is, except for Detroit, the ballpark is bigger than the one I played in, and there's I don't know about San Diego. I didn't play San Diego. The ballpark's smaller than it used to be. It was really big. In Oakland, it's smaller. In Seattle, it's small. Everywhere else, the ballpark is smaller, and so you probably wind up hitting a few more home runs. I don't like the acceptance of strikeouts. The stolen base has been lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really like the uppercut that much. I think you need to learn to find a barrel. You need to learn I call it find a barrel. It's really to have the barrel find the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But I like a hitter type like Andujar that hits the ball as hard to right field as he does in left field, rather than trying to hit the ball in the air and accepting strikeouts. I don't think I'm not big on accepting the strikeouts, because if you face Scherzer, or you face Tanaka, or you face these guys that are good pitchers now, Verlander, and you let them strike out 12 or 13, you're not going to beat them because you're not going to have enough base runners.
Yeah, but it seems like it's accepted not only by the players but by the front office now. It's like, you know, they just assume strikeouts are part of the game.
I don't know if I agree with that. You know, I don't think our general manager is happy with a lot of strikeouts.
Well, but they knew Stanton was going to strike out 200 times. They're willing to accept that.
I'll take that with 50 homers. It's different with guys like that. It's different with guys that are going to hit 40, 35, 40 home runs. But you're not a home run hitter when you hit 20.
Not anymore. You used to be, though. It used to be a pretty acceptable number 40 years ago.
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah. So, who was the toughest pitcher you faced, Reggie? I mean, you've faced some great pitchers. Who really gave you fits?
I had, you know, times when there was a guy named Scott McGregor, a little left-hander with Baltimore, that he could throw the ball right in my eyes down and right down the middle, and I couldn't hit it. I just would swing through it. And he only threw 88. 80, 89. Mm. You know, at the same time, I think I had 1 year I hit five home runs off it, but I had 10 years I didn't hit nothing.
Huh.
You know, and it's just the way it goes. But I think some of the greatest challenges I had was facing Seaver in the World Series in '73. Jim Palmer was always a handful. Fergie Jenkins was a handful. I faced Frank Tanana when he was young. He threw 95, 96 and big curveball, stuff like that. I faced Catfish when he was with his first year with the Yankees until I came over here, and I hated hitting off him. I couldn't hit him.
Huh.
But there were a few guys that made it tough for me, but by and large, I got around most of them.
I think you did. So who was a great pitcher that you actually hit well against?
Oh, gosh. A lot of the great pitchers wouldn't let me beat them.
Mm-hmm.
They'd stay away or, you know, they'd stay away and pitch around me and pitch to somebody else on the Yankees or pitch around me when I was with Oakland and face Bando or Rudy. I really did enjoy the challenges of facing Jimmy Palmer or facing Jack Morris. Facing Mickey Lolich, facing Nolan Ryan, I enjoyed it. It was real, true, great baseball. Playing against a guy that it was all you could handle, and you wound up having success. I remember here in Yankee Stadium, I hit home run number 40 here off of Jack Morris, and I was so proud that I hit 40th home run off a future Hall of Famer. I remember hitting a couple home runs off Mickey Lolich, and I said, boy, I got myself a real lefty today. Cause he had just beat the Cardinals, you know, three times in the World Series. So, you know, those memories there, you know, are kind of feel-good stuff. I got a couple of hits off to help beat Tom Seaver in the sixth game of the World Series there in '73. And at the time, you know, Tommy and Bob Gibson and Marichal, those guys were wheeling and dealing for the best right-hander in the game. So it was facing those guys and having success was really cool.
It's just amazing. Just the names you rattled off there. I mean, it's like a who's who of, you know, baseball history. Amazing career, amazing life. You got anything else for Reggie before we let him go, Dan?
No, I was just listening and just in awe right now. Good stuff. And I just like that you talk to the Yankees and you're with them and you're been at the advisor role for so long, and being a young Yankee fan like I am, it's always great to see Reggie around the stadium, around the batting practice cage. That's when you know it's a big game when Reggie's in town. So I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
You're welcome. I did that for Wally. He's been around for quite a while, and I respect him. But I enjoy the privilege of being with the Yankees, is how I'd like to say that.
All right, awesome. We loved having you on, Reggie, and I'll see you at the ballpark later on, buddy.
Okay, guys.
All right, thanks so much.
Thanks,
Reggie Jackson, the one and only Mr. October. Interesting story about the guy who showed up late at batting practice.
Yeah, I'm trying
yesterday
to think of who it was.
Oh, I know who it was, but I'm not going to tell you.
Do a Twitter poll, and we'll try to figure out who you think it was. Yeah, good stuff from Reggie. I mean, the guy, he can talk. He's like, I have no problem on Sirius XM.
Oh, not at all. He won't have any trouble filling time. But it's amazing. You know, I'm looking at his record as we speak here. And, you know, he's struck out more than anybody in the history of baseball.
Yes, that's a
fact.
That's
the only record where he's on top of the record.
I was not going to bring that up.
And he never, but here's the thing, and he hates the strikeout.
Yeah.
He never struck out more than 171 times.
I did look. I have his baseball reference page open. Yes, they have that gold number around the
2597.
That is just absurd. But you're right. And today, you know, Curtis Granderson struck out 225 times in a season. Chris Davis struck out over 200 times.
Right.
You can go down the list of Adam Dunn struck out over 200 times. But you're right. I think the highest he had was 171. That was his legitimately rookie season of 1968.
Right. And when this year, John Carlos Stanton's up to 199 now, and they got 12, 13 games left, so he's going over 200.
What's also impressive about his numbers, if you just take a look, is how close he batted to 300 a bunch of seasons for a guy, you know, that pretty much swung for the fences and he had that approach up there. But, you know, it's a couple seasons where he batted 300, 297, 286, 289.
He was a good hitter. He's a good all-around hitter.
Like you look at his OPS.
Well,
here's
the thing. I was trying to bait him before we got on the air about, you know, talking about, you know, 560 home runs in your day as compared to today. and he wouldn't take the bait. But the truth is, you know, people this week have been carrying on about Jacob DeGrom striking out 250 batters.
Yeah.
And how great it is, and he's the first Mets since Tom Seaver. Well, when Tom Seaver did it, nobody was striking out. The whole league struck out 10,000 times.
That's what makes it more impressive.
Thank
right?
you. Yeah. It was much harder to strike people out in 1973
than it is now.
There was a different approach.
Approach at the plate. Now, I mean, Reggie Jackson now would have fit in perfectly because he's a three true outcome guy. He either struck out, he walked, or he hit a home run.
Yeah.
Nowadays, he'd fit perfectly in any lineup right now.
But it's interesting that he doesn't like players who are those kind of players, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, I didn't want to say, like, I mean, it's pretty much your exact profile. Another great thing he said is I wasn't a guy that liked to talk to the media or a guy that liked to make a big stink. I was like, man, everything I've heard from Reggie, I never actually saw him play, but, you know, you watch the Yankeeographies and you read the books. It's like,
it was a pretty
I feel like Reggie was holding court and I'm the star that stirs the drink. It's one of the most legendary quotes in all of baseball.
He was a pretty good quote, that's for sure. And I know he's on Twitter now, but can you imagine if he played in this era?
I don't believe that he wouldn't be on Twitter.
Of course he would be.
He would be all over it. There's ways to do it the right way and there's ways to do it the wrong way.
Fans would be going crazy, you know, Reggie, taking sides, either Reggie or Thurman, Reggie or Billy, right? I mean, yeah. It would just be insane.
You guys would have a great time. The media would be right in the middle of it all.
I don't know. It'd be kind of busy. It'd be kind of thing that you'd have to watch 24 hours a day. I don't think I'm up for it.
But how would a slugger like him in today's game, do you think he would stand out like he did? Because of the big game, the penchant for big games?
Here's the interesting thing. You know, he mentioned the size of Judge and Stanton. And Reggie was considered big.
And he's not really that big.
And he's not big at all. I mean, you know, he was listed as 6 foot and 195, but he was considered big and muscular for his era. And now he's slightly bigger than, you know, Ronald Torres or Brett Gardner. So the game obviously has changed. But you also have to think that if he lived, you know, if his prime was now, he'd be bigger than that.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, you hit three home runs in a World Series game, you look at his postseason numbers, that might separate him because everyone hits home runs these days, and his big personality, I do think he would be just as big as as A-Rod. Maybe, you know,
well, I have a theory, and I have this theory from boxing, that the top guys in any era would be the top guys in any era.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, like you take Reggie Jackson, put him in today's game, he would somehow find a way to be Reggie Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Dempsey today would find a way to be the heavyweight champion among these guys.
Muhammad Ali, what do you think?
Oh, forget like, it. It's not even, I wouldn't even mention
Can you imagine the amount of frontward-facing Instagram videos Muhammad Ali would be doing? He'd be rapping every morning into his phone.
He would own Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, all of it.
Yeah, before we say goodbye, did you see this, Wally? Tonight, when you are listening to your respective broadcast, radio telecast, or broadcast, whether in Boston market or in New York market, you're going to hear John Sterling for one inning calling on the Red Sox broadcast.
Wow.
How about that?
That's great.
On Tuesday afternoon, it's not an afternoon, it's going to be a night game, the Red Sox and Yankees will make a trade, swapping radio announcers during the fourth inning of their game, three-game series opener against Yankee Stadium. Sterling said it's just a cute idea.
It's a cute idea. You know, anyway, the one, too.
I can just imagine him saying, it's just a cute idea. Nothing to worry about. I'll be back.
So let's come up with a home run call. Let's say Benintendi hits one.
How much
is he
going
to say? Andy is dandy.
Benintendi.
Right?
I have nothing.
He'll come up with something. I know.
Reggie couldn't even come up with one.
No. And John's made his bed, man. He's got to come up with one every time. Although he did stumble on Hechavarria.
Yeah, he said he didn't have one. I'm sorry.
Well, because, he didn't expect it.
I was not expecting him to say, I'm sorry. I thought he had an excuse or something. He just said, you know what? I just didn't have one for him.
Wow. Because it's a hard, you know, it's a hard one to rhyme.
Yeah, and it's, like, funny because I saw when this story was posted last week, like, of course, you know, Twitter outrage and people going crazy. It was hilarious. Some guy goes, this is BS. I mean, we're supposed to hate them, and this is not how you're supposed to operate. I was going to tell the guy, listen, bro, like, first of all, the media don't hate each other.
No.
The players don't even hate each other.
Just the fans hate each other.
They
all share agents. What are you talking about? Hate each other.
Yeah, but this isn't the first time this happened, though. In the early 90s, CBS Radio conducted a weekly hometown inning on its national broadcast where Sterling switched booths with the Mets and Howie Rose and him.
Wow. You're talking about a fan base that was outraged.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
But I'm really hoping that someone goes deep. A Red Sox goes deep while Sterling is in the
and I hope
Boston
it's somebody
booth.
Like Benintendi.
Mookie. Hits a cookie?
That's not a hits a cookie.
I don't know.
Something with bets?
Xander Bogarts. Bogarts one.
Mm.
I'm trying to go around the diamond here.
It's hard, man.
Nunez. If Nunez.
Nooney.
What do you have one for?
Nooney hits one to the Mooney.
Yeah, he had one. He already had one for Nunez.
Did he?
Yeah. But I tried to try one out on Reggie. He wasn't feeling it.
Nah.
Reggie Jackson? That's okay.
Yeah, it's just okay.
It's okay, Don.
Yeah, he'll, you know, Don, right?
That's an honor.
That's right. At least he called you by your name.
It's an honor. Is this Don or is this Wally? No, this is Dan.
He didn't grab your name tag. That's the third guy here, Dan.
Yeah, he would have, if I was here, if we were interviewing in the flesh, I'm sure he would have just, like, looked me up and down.
He would have made you stand in the corner.
Stand in the corner. He would have brought me back to my caddying days where, but that was great. Awesome stuff, Wally, getting Reggie and just hearing from him. And, you know, I obviously didn't get to see him play, but the biggest thing that I took from Reggie in my generation, I think, is his role that he has now with the Yankees.
Yeah, I
being
mean,
that, you know, kind of like slugger whisperer.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what he does with these guys, quite honestly.
He says a lot of we, so he's part of the team.
Without a doubt. But, he stands around the batting cage. He talks to them. You see him in spring training now and then. I mean, he's basically being Reggie.
Right, that's the big game. And you turn on Yes, and it's the pregame, and
there's
it's a
Reggie.
Big game. It's Reggie.
That's how you know.
He's wearing, like, a turtleneck because it's cold out, and he's talking to Giambi. Back then, he's either talking to A-Rod.
Sure.
He's talking to the high-priced slugger. That's what I wanted to get his thoughts on. You know, what are you going to be telling Stanton, you know, come Wednesday, October 3rd? When the Yankees play that wild card game, whether it's
you heard
be
what he
the
said.
Bronx
don't
or,
step on my foot.
Don't step on my crush him. 6'1", 180. He's not big anymore. That's wild.
Yeah, but he was quite a guy in his day, and you know, I didn't want to say anything to him, but you know, I was a Met fan in '73, and I was not happy with him.
Well, because he was on the A's.
Yeah, but plus, you know, he did hit. He had a game when he hit against Seaver in one of those games.
Yeah. Young
was,
Reggie.
Yeah, was not happy with the dude at all.
I was looking at the money that he made too. It's wild making $500,000 in 19. You know, in the mid '70s. That's huge. He was a pioneer in a lot of ways.
Yes, it was, and it's just like, you know, the way his 500 home runs translate to like 1,000 today. That money probably translates to 5 or 10 million.
They made $9 million total in his career.
That's amazing.
Which Giancarlo probably it will make in like three.
Oh,
four weeks.
Like in 2 days, yeah.
That's right. Unbelievable. But we got more coming up next week. We're going to be some more big guests. I know you're trying to wrangle John Flaherty, trying to get David Cohn back on the show. Things are gearing up. The playoffs are right around the corner.
I'm trying to get Babe Ruth, but he hasn't answered.
Keep texting him. I know that he's big on Twitter too. So you might want to send him a DM, slide in the Bambino's DMs, see what he's up to. But we got big things coming your way next week. The Yankees. We're going to have to win some ball games. You're going to have to hold off the A's because they do not want to play that game in Oakland Coliseum, banging the drum. Chris Davis in the batter's box going up against who's going to be starting that game. There's a lot of questions remain to be seen, but we'll be back next week for another edition of the New York Baseball Podcast.